Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the Bike James podcast. Today I am joined by Connor Fearon. Connor, how's it going, buddy?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. Connor is a 22-year-old downhill racer, a World Cup professional downhill racer, races for the Kona Factory team. He's from South Australia. I'm going to let you pronounce the name of the town that you were born from in so I don't slaughter it and piss off all the Australians out there.
Adelaide. Pretty simple.
Adelaide. Excellent. That's how I would have attempted it, but perfect. So you've been riding for quite a while, even though you're still pretty young. You've been riding, you know, pretty much since you, you know, learned to ride when you were a kid, and racing since 2005. Got a few other hobbies like motocross and dirt jumping and skateboarding, and see fast cars on there as well. So you sound like a typical 22-year-old World Cup downhill racer who likes speed and adrenaline, man. So yeah, I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today and talk to you a little bit about your journey to where you've gotten to, and then also pick your brain a little bit about flat pedals, because you're also one of the few World Cup racers on the downhill scene still wearing flat pedals. You got fifth place at your last race, so congratulations on that. But yeah, I'll just kind of open it up with that. Connor, just tell us a little bit about yourself and yeah, kind of how you got to where you're at.
Yeah, well, I guess started racing in 2005, did a couple years racing motocross before that, and then my older brother, like, we got some cool tracks right behind our house, and he started riding it with his friends on like pretty crappy bikes, and then I thought it looked pretty cool when he took me along and just loved it. And then me and my friends just started riding it all the time, like never stopped, and saw like a flyer for a local downhill race in the bike shop, and we ended up going and just had heaps of fun, and all the people there were really nice, and it was just like a good event for us to go to. So we did the rest of the season like just local races at home, and we just had heaps of fun. Then a couple of years later, I think 2007, me and my friends drove over with our parents and did the national champs in Canberra for under 15s, I think, back then. And yeah, like just from then on, just raced all the national races and just all the races I could, and went to Whistler with my dad when I was 15 or 16, I think, and did all those races, which was good and opened my eyes to what the tracks are really like, because at home it's all pretty mellow, and I just couldn't really believe like the tracks that Whistler had, and just saw all the pros there as well, and I just thought they were like the coolest people ever, and I guess just really wanted to be like them. And lucky enough, the year after that, Kona sponsored me in the national team, and I did a couple national races and flew over for the World Cups in 2011, I think, as a just the first year. And back then there was no junior category, so we had to race just all the elites, and qualified for every race that year, which was I was pretty stoked with. And yeah, just kept on going with the Kona team, and they're happy with what I was doing and really like the team and their bikes, so it's just a good match for me. And then I guess the next couple of years, like, nothing really amazing happened. I got maybe a top 10, or I was just chipping away, like, slowly getting better. And last year got second at Leogang, so that was my first podium, and I was, like, really stoked just to get World Cup podium. Was just a big dream of mine, and to finally pull it off was sweet. And like, apart from that, last year was a pretty bad season. Then this year, I guess my goals coming in were just to have a consistent year, and I have. So my worst result is 12th, and pretty consistently in the top 10 with qualifying and racing. And yeah, just the last race got another podium, which I was stoked with. Like, so got a 5th and 6th overall in the series now. So yeah, I guess that's the story so far.
Nice, man. That's awesome. Definitely a fast rise in the World Cup scene there for a young guy. So I guess kind of going back, it sounds like you had a bit of riding experience as a kid. I mean, I guess tell me a little bit about as a kid. I mean, did you grow up riding bikes? I mean, is that like some of your earliest memories is on bikes? Like, when did you start riding motorcycles? Yeah, it definitely sounds like you had some experience before you decided to jump on a mountain bike a little bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, I remember just as far back as I can remember, just begging my parents to take us down to the BMX track as a kid on the weekend and after school and stuff, and just riding around the house whenever I got a chance. And, like, yeah, I don't know, just loved bikes. Like, me and my brother, I just rode all the time, and luckily all my friends pretty much liked the same thing, so all I can remember is just bikes, like from, I don't know, as far back as I can go, and watching home videos, like that dad has got stashed up somewhere, it's just me riding a bike and everyone else doing their own thing, like all the family functions and stuff, which is pretty funny, but yeah, I guess like it was, I don't know, well, my parents say it was just inevitable me to choose this path, and luckily it's worked out for me.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think that's something that people take for granted sometimes when they see guys like you and they see the moment, you know, okay, I'm standing on a podium, but not necessarily realizing like, man, I've been on a bike since before I can remember.
And
it's just been part of my life and what I've done. And you know, it definitely has a big impact on your ability to step up and be successful quickly on the World Cup scene. So cool. Yeah, that's just something I've kind of noticed in talking to other top pro riders. It seems like a lot of them have a similar story where their parents are telling them like, man, this was just kind of inevitable. You were, you know, born almost with handlebars in your hand. Yeah. So cool. So was there a moment where you knew that you could be a pro downhill rider?
Not really. Like when I was never really set out to be a pro downhill rider. Like I just wanted to ride my bike either way. Like if I was just racing sport, the local races, finishing mid pack, like I'd still be stoked and riding as much as I do. But I just like, I don't know, like just, I'd always expect like the first couple of years, I was like, oh cool, like probably have to get a job next year or something. And then Kona would want to sponsor me again. I was like, oh sweet, don't have to do that. And then, yeah, like just the last couple of years, I've realized that I probably will be, this is my career now. So it's pretty stoked, like just unexpected. Like, I don't know, never really like just thought I was going to be professional or whatever. It just slowly happened. And I don't know, just all I've really, haven't really put effort into making it my career, I guess. I've just been doing the best I can and riding as much as I can and having fun, and the rest has just fallen into place.
Yeah, okay. So it sounds like you're kind of focusing more on the process than the end result. You didn't necessarily set out to be a pro rider, but you've done all the things that will make you a successful pro rider, and here you are. Is that kind of it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, like people ask you, like, oh, how'd you become professional or whatever? And like, I don't really know. I just rode my bike and raced when I could, and I think people just see that, and then obviously getting good results really helps. And I don't know, just being nice to everyone and getting to know everyone, it just worked out. Like the Kona thing is just really good for me. Like we're on the same page. Like they're not just all pushing for results. They just see like what I'm doing, and yeah, they're happy with that. So, but that said, I do train really hard and like am striving to be the best rider I can be at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like I think that any rider who really wants to enjoy riding at its highest level appreciates what training can do, because you just can't really achieve the same level of fun when you're not as fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So awesome. Well, I guess let me rephrase that a little bit. So when you – obviously you're a young kid, got picked up, you're on the World Cup circuit – you're seeing these guys that you know, just a couple years before, you're looking up to and watching on Red Bull TV and stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, bam, I'm here. And there had to be a little bit of an intimidation factor there, and maybe not. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, but you know, was there kind of a moment where you were like, I belong, you know, like I can be a World Cup downhill racer and make this my profession? I'm just kind of curious. I'm always just curious of when people, it seems to be kind of that moment where you think like, you know, I can do this.
Yeah, well, I guess like when I guess it was like stages, like people always talk about getting a top 10 or a top 20. And then the first result that really stood out was I got 10th at Leo Gang, like maybe four years ago now. I think I was 19 or something, or 18, and like after that race, people, like some of the pros, I remember G Aston came up, he was like, yeah, good job, man. And like I was in front of quite a few of the like massive names that I just look up to, and I was like, wow, like I actually straight up beat some of these guys. And I think that was the race that I like knew that maybe I could do it, because yeah, like looking at the results list, there was huge names like behind me, and that was just, I surprised myself, I think, a bit there.
Yeah, Okay, yeah, cool, man. No, that's awesome to hear. I love stories like that. It's kind of hearing when was that moment that you're like, you know, that's it. And having G. Atkinson come up to you and say good job is definitely a moment that can make you feel like, hey, maybe I can do this.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess we've already mentioned his name. I guess when you were growing up, who were some of the biggest influences on your riding? Who did you look up to? Whose riding styles and approaches to training did you, you know, want to emulate yourself after?
I guess like being from Australia, I was like, we didn't have, well, there was a bit of internet, but it was more like magazines and the movies that came out in the year that you got to see. And it was just like Sam Hill, Nathan Rennie and Kavarik. Like those three mainly, they were just gods to me. Like I just couldn't believe it. And then pretty much I like went to one of the nationals and Sam Hill was there, and I just like I was so starstruck, couldn't believe it. Like I was like just amazed. And so like those three guys, and mainly all the Australian guys. Like I didn't like Steve Pete as well, obviously. Like just everywhere in the magazines, and but mainly the Australian guys that were killing it. Like 10 years ago, like Bryn as well, Bryn Atkinson, like those guys were just major influences to me.
Awesome. Yeah. The Australian invasion. Have you met Scott Sharples?
Yeah, I have a couple times. Haven't spoken to him too much, but yeah, I've definitely crossed paths with him before.
Cool. And for those of people that don't know, Scott Sharples was the coach for the Australian national team back during that time, and was pretty much, you know, had a hand in what is known as the Australian invasion of Sam Hill and Nathan Rennie and you know, some other guys from you know, from Australia that just showed up and started making some huge waves. And Scott was also a high level World Cup racer himself, but I had the chance to work with Scott and talk to him a little bit when he was working with the Yeti team, when both him and I were working for them when Aaron Gwynn was racing for him. So I had the chance to talk to him and pick his brain, and I've always really admired him and his approach to training a downhill racer, because I felt like we had a lot of similar philosophies, you know, as far as like what's the point of being on a road bike and some of the other other things that are commonly held in most downhill training circles. But Scott was one of the first guys to kind of buck the trend and do things a little bit differently, and the results pretty much speak for themselves. So I guess with that kind of said, what's your training like? I haven't had a chance to, you know, talk to you at all about your training. I know that you take your training seriously. So, I guess, you know, are there some influences that you had on your training program? What's kind of a typical training week for you like? I mean, just give me a little insight on what you do to keep yourself in shape and gunning for the top.
Yeah. I guess like I wasn't really training properly till, I guess, last year, honestly. It was probably the first year I started training properly. Like until then, I was just like, she'll be right. Like just winging it and riding my cross country bike when I could be bothered, and mainly just riding downhill like the whole time. But then like, yeah, like 2 years ago, I was like, I think like to get any further in it, I need to start training. And then there's a really cool gym close to my house, and I talked to them and I got set up with a cool trainer. He didn't know much about the sport when I started, but he's dedicated himself, and he's learned a lot about the sport, and he came out to the Cairns World Cup this year, and he's got a good program with me. And I only do 2 days in the gym, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then pretty much ride my trail bike every day, basically, like when I'm at home. I do a bit of road riding, but I just find it really boring, like not very, there's just no reward. You ride up a hill, then you get to ride down, at least on a trail bike. You can ride up the hill, then shred the downhill tracks on the way home. But
yeah,
I don't know. During the summer, I get into road riding a bit, but I just like get really bored and it easily. I got a short attention span, so need to be doing something interesting. And but yeah, nothing really too out of the ordinary. Like when we're in the gym, we're just doing a lot of circuits and stuff like that. Like not super heavy weight and doing a lot of everything using the core. I don't. He sets up for me, and we just hit it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And but yeah, like honestly, not too much downhill when I'm home. Like just we don't really have that many downhill tracks. So during the off season, I'm pretty much just on my trail bike all the time and race the nationals and some other races at home on a downhill bike. But yeah, just mainly save the downhill bike for the season when I'm over this side of the world. And like at the moment, this break, just riding my downhill bike every day in Bromont.
Nice. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and that's, you know, keeping it basic, I think, is something that surprises a lot of people when they look at like what pro riders do. They expect to see this really complicated thing, and for every one person that you find that has some really complicated approach to what they're doing, you're going to find a dozen or more others who are just a real basic, hey, 2-3 days a week in the gym and then ride my bike as much as possible. I think that's a pretty consistent formula for success for a mountain biker. So in the gym, any favorite exercises or things like that that you do?
I guess not too we do a lot of like different circuits, like mainly like 5 to 6 minute long, just getting like trying to emulate what a downhill run would be like.
Yeah.
The other day, like, because what I have over here is like, we don't have too much stuff over here because there's not really a good gym, so the trainer just set out for me to do 100 burpees in a row, which really sucked. Took me about 5 minutes, but that's definitely one of my least favorite ones to do. But yeah, we just do a lot of that. And like, it is, it's nothing like a lot of people do. They'll take like sets of handlebars into the gym and do stuff like that, like really specific, but we don't do any of that. Like, you know, they might do like, I don't know, like squats, but in their pedal position, like 1 foot forward. But I don't know, I guess like you got to be a good athlete, like all around for downhill. So we just kind of cover all bases in the gym.
Yeah, no, that's a good, I definitely, you know, agree with that strategy. I think that trying to get too fancy in the gym can definitely take away from its purpose, which is to build just kind of your general strength and athleticism, and then allow your time on the bike to convert that into sport specific strength and fitness. So that again, man, I think that's not, it's not a a coincidence that you've, you know, found some success with the approach that you've had. So
yeah, definitely. And I also think like you can train as hard as you can in the gym, and you can rock up to Mont Saint Anne and without riding a downhill bike, and it will be just so hard. Like, you need to get, like, even just riding downhill is like, gets you fitter and more in shape just for your downhill bike. So like, I think just riding downhill, like, you don't really need to do that fancy stuff in the gym. Like, the downhill bike is fine for that.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's again, totally what I've found, both my own experience and talking with other riders, that, you know, playing your sport is the most important thing to do that you can do. I think a lot of riders who are getting into training make the mistake of thinking that you can become a better rider in the gym. And that's not necessarily what you're doing. You're increasing your potential as a rider in the gym, but you've got to get on the bike. You've got to spend a lot of time on the bike to make it convert. So awesome, man. No, that sounds good. So if you're advising a new rider, is there any advice kind of looking back on things, you know, looking back on your career in hindsight, saying like, man, I was, you know, I'm really glad I did that, or, you know, something that you, you know, wish you would have spent more time working on, or, you know, yeah. Is anybody, any general advice for new mountain bikers that you like to give?
I guess probably in my career so far, the best thing I've done is just stay by the same sponsors. Like, I go every time my contract's up, I get a few offers, and like, I don't know, it might sound good at the time, but you just like, I guess just swapping all the time, sponsors, like going to the best deal every year is probably not the smartest thing to do. I don't know, like me and Kona have worked, we've just worked good together and for like almost 7 years now. And like, maybe if I had swapped out, and then maybe I would have not got a sponsor the next year or something like that. Cause you see it happens quite often. Like a few of the young Australian guys, like a few years ago, they just died out, and then I don't really know why, but maybe that's, they just couldn't get a deal. But I think that's what I've done best is just, I don't know, stuck by the same sponsors, and I guess, I don't know, it's got me this far, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Excellent. Well, I guess in talking about that, are there any kind of practical steps that, you know, did they just approach you? Do you have any advice for riders who are looking to maybe pick up their first sponsor, things that they should keep in mind?
Yeah, I guess kind of they did approach me just at, like, at the Nationals, but before then I was just in the local bike shop, like state, just we like loved going to the bike shop, and I got to know the guys when I was young. Like, ever since I was 10, we just went to the local bike shop down the road, and slowly they like gave us a deal on some bikes and then tires, and then like they do grassroots programs for just the kids, like the local kids racing. And then I guess that's the first stepping stone into getting sponsored, just like their grassroots stuff. So through your local bike shop, and then as you get better, I guess it goes maybe further up the line, like the importers might help you out. Then it goes to the actual company, like, because that's what happened with Kona. I was just, the importer sponsored me for the nationals, and then I guess that's how it got the attention from the actual factory over in Canada. And then, yeah, when they invited me to do the World Cups, I was stoked. And then just ever since then, it's just gotten better and better every year.
Awesome. Any advice for representing a sponsor well? Anything that you see, mistakes you see riders make sometimes that might upset sponsors?
Not really. Like, everyone seems to be pretty good in this sport. It seems like everyone knows what's going on and everyone's kind, and there's not much, like, really not much negative stuff going around that I can see at all. So I'm sure, like, obviously you just, like, it's pretty simple stuff. If they're getting sponsored, just put your the sponsor stuff in a good light and be nice to people. And I guess getting good results isn't the be-all, end-all for sponsors. Like, they would rather sponsor someone that's, like, a positive influence to other people, or just did, like, a nice guy at the races that everyone knows. Then, like, they're not going to sponsor a cocky kid who wins every race, like, because that's not good for their products.
Okay. No, that's really good advice, to focus more on the to realize that off-the-track stuff is just as important as the on-the-track stuff when it comes to getting and developing sponsor relationships. I think that's really good advice for people. Cool. So do you think there's kind of a certain mindset or strategy that's helped you get where you're at? I mean, you've obviously had the chance to see other people who are – had potential and didn't necessarily realize that potential. And looking at that, do you think that there's something that kind of separated you, like I said, either with the mindset that you have or just kind of with a basic strategy that you have that's allowed you to succeed?
Yeah, I won't name the names, but like a few of the Australian guys that were just a few years older than me, and then they had factory rides, and then once they didn't get a ride, they just stopped riding altogether, like would never pick up a bike after that, which kind of like puzzles me, because if I stopped getting sponsored, I'd still ride every single day, just, which I guess maybe shows that they didn't really like love the sport. They were just maybe not really sure. Like, I just couldn't see myself doing that, like stop getting sponsored, then just stop riding completely. I think maybe it shows that they're not like in love with the sport itself. They just were doing it to be professional or something, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. I think it's funny, the word passion, people forget, like, the root word is, you know, comes from to suffer for. And so it's not all fun and games and sunshine. It's that ability to kind of grind through and continue to, you know, keep your eye or just enjoy the process, I guess, is what really kind of helps you succeed in the end. At least it kind of sounds like that's what you're, what you found.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
Cool, man. Excellent. All right. Well, I got one more question for you before I let you go, and that is on flat pedals. And like I mentioned earlier, you are one of the few riders on the downhill World Cup scene still racing on flats, but obviously showing that it's possible to do extremely well. I mean, you're beating riders who are on clipless pedals, obviously showing like there's kind of more to this than clipless pedals are better than flat. So I guess first, as a pro downhill rider, why do you like to ride flats?
I guess like when I was a kid and watching Sam and Nathan and Kavarik, they obviously all riding flats, and those guys was who I looked up to. And then I guess, I don't know, like back then I thought you were just cool having flats because most people run clips and it was just the cool thing to do. So like I never really transferred to clips. And like in the last few years, I usually ride clips on my trail bike and like just cross country because it's more efficient, I guess, and easier. But every time I chuck them on my downhill bike, it's just like I'm only 80% committed to everything. And I'm sure with more practice, that'd probably go away. But like definitely a lot of things are easy with clips, but like I try to change, but I just can't do it. Like I just love riding in flats. You can just turn with no fear at all of sliding out or anything. Like, but yeah, just maybe like it would be a good idea to change to clips, because I do think maybe it's probably more beneficial, but I just have more fun in flats, and I'll probably stay true to that for the next bit. And it also is, it's kind of cool, like you get a bit of cred at the races riding in flats, and then you see people with clips and they say, oh, it's so hard to ride flats, and you feel pretty sweet when that happens.
Yeah, no doubt. So what do you feel the advantages of learning how to ride flat pedals? I think there's kind of an epidemic in the mountain biking world of riders switching to clipless pedals too soon and never really learning how to ride flat pedals. So as a pro, what do you feel are the advantages of at least first learning how to ride on flats before switching to clipless?
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure, but there's definitely like, because obviously people who ride clips all the time and they try to ride the flats, they just say it's like impossible. And I think it helps to like learn to balance on the bike, because you can't, you got to like have a lot of weight on the pedals so your feet don't fall off and still control the bike. So I guess you just connect, you're less connected to the bike. So you need to be smoother maybe on the bike so your feet don't fall off. And, but I'm not sure. I do find it's like easier to set up my bike for different tracks with flat pedals, because I know if it's not working, then I really know, because my feet are moving around and like your pedals need to be not moving a lot. So if your back wheel is chopping around and like you just know, because with clips, obviously your feet aren't going to fall off if you get loose. So you can kind of have it like that. But with the flat pedals, I can really like dial in my bike setup and like pinpoint where it's really working for the different tracks.
Ah, that's really interesting. I never, because I mean, as you probably know, I'm like one of the biggest flat pedal advocates out there, and you know, really love to champion the advantages of people learning how to at least, you know, learn to ride on flats first, so that it kind of forces you to develop a good pedal stroke and good technique. And but I never really thought about flats also forcing you to get your bike set up properly, so that you don't realize, you know, with your feet attached to the pedal, sometimes you don't realize if your bike's not set up as efficiently as possible. You don't notice that because your feet aren't necessarily telling you that. So that's a really interesting insight that I'd never thought about before. I like that.
Yeah, and also I think whenever I have the, because I've got the pretty skinny pedals in my bike, and I just feel a bit lower down, like, because obviously with the clip pedal and then the cleat, like, it adds like a little bit of height onto your pedals. So like when I'm riding flats, it just feels like I'm sitting inside the bike a bit more, which is just, you get used to it pretty quick, but it's just another little thing I notice when I'm swap between the two.
Yeah. No, man, I totally agree. I think that there's definitely some real legitimate advantages to running flats. It's not an either or thing, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, clipless have advantages, but I think what the problem is that for so long the mountain biking world has disregarded any advantages that flat pedals might have, and like I said, it's kind of sent a bad message, especially to new riders. Do you have any advice or tips for riders about the best way to use flats? I mean, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, well, I'm going to give flats a shot, I mean, do you have any advice to new flat pedal riders?
Yeah, you can. I think a couple key things. You might need to put your handlebars a bit higher, so you're kind of, I have my forks really stiff, probably stiffer than most people, and have my handlebars pretty high, so I just kind of sit back and like have all my weight on my pedals. I guess another thing I do is like I stretch my calves a lot, so my feet can be on like a bigger angle, so like my feet, the pedals like rotated back, I guess, so when you're going through rough sections, like on some of the gnarlier World Cup tracks, like the hardest thing is your feet just sliding forward down some of the gnarly tracks, like Vatasol and Mont-Saint-Anne. Like they'll just slide forward because they just slowly rattle forward. But if you get your feet like rotated back, then it's harder for that to happen. And then I guess like if you stretch your calves every so often, then it's going to like make that angle a bit better. So keep your feet on.
Nice. Excellent. So I also noticed in some of your riding pictures that you have a kind of a midfoot position on your pedals, as opposed to a, you know, ball of the foot over the axle. Is that something that you just found to work best for you? I guess kind of give me a little insight on that, because obviously the midfoot position isn't as technically quote unquote correct as being on the ball of the foot, but I've noticed that you and actually a lot of other guys on the World Cup downhill scene have a little bit more of a midfoot position. So yeah, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I guess like I never really think of it. It's just I always put my feet where it just feels normal to have them kind of a bit further, feet a bit further forward on the pedal, and I don't notice I do it, but then obviously in the photos and bottom of my shoes, they're all like you can see where the pins are, like right really far back, and it's another thing I struggle. I put clips on and then it's way too far, the cleats is way too far forward even though it's like furthest back on the shoe, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I just used to like I'm not really thought about it and like thought about it being a benefit or whatever. It's just what feels natural to me, and just I think it's more planted, like just having it your foot a bit further forward on the pedal, and you can just put a lot of weight through it, like in the rough sections, and just so it's not going to shake around. Or but yeah, like yeah, it just feels weird when I use clips and it's not like that. So I don't really know what, like why it's better, but it's just how I've like learned to do it over the years, and obviously it was better for me. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it like that.
Yeah, what, oh God, I forgot what I was going to ask. I had a follow-up question with the midfoot. Oh, yeah, agility. That's one of the things. Sorry. You don't feel that midfoot position affects your agility. Cause that's, again, it's one of the, things that people will say about why you need to be on the balls of your feet. Because if you're in that midfoot position, you're not agile enough. So, I mean, obviously you don't feel that midfoot position affects your agility at all on the bike.
Oh no, not at all. Like, I kind of like, well, in the air and stuff, it's, I like move my feet around a lot, and in photos, I don't notice I do it, but like my feet are like tilted up in the air, like over one side. But I think when I ride clips, I do notice I can't move my foot around like that. But yeah, I don't notice any lack of agility, like having my feet in the middle like that.
Perfect. Awesome, man. No, that's cool. I really appreciate the insights and advice with that stuff there. So, that's about all the questions I had for you, man. I see you were, I've had you here for about half an hour. I appreciate you taking the time. Any other thoughts or advice or anything you want to leave us with before we head on?
No, it seems like it covered quite a bit then.
Yeah, man. No, that was great. Yeah, I definitely got some great takeaways from that, and I know other people will as well. So if people want to find out more about you and follow your exploits on the World Cup circuit, where can they find you?
Oh, breaking off a little bit.
Oh, sorry. I was just asking if people want to follow your exploits.
You can follow my Facebook page, just kind of fearing on Facebook. I just made it and going to be updating those at the World Cups, and then just my Instagram for all the daily updates of me riding around and at the races as well.
Perfect, man. Excellent. Yeah, well, definitely everybody check out Connor and his exploits on the World Cup scene. And yeah, I guess I really appreciate the time again, and we'll be keeping a tab on you and cheering for you as you continue your rise through the ranks, and maybe we'll have to get you on again and pick your brain on some other stuff in the future.
Yeah, no worries. Not my pleasure.
Excellent, Connor. Well, right on. Well, everybody, this is, once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. You guys can check me out at bikejames.com, where you can find more podcast interviews like this and free workouts and stuff you can check out. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this one, and I'll talk to you in the next one.